you are not a riot. You are a right-wing terror military assault. About you, you are not rebellion. You are a pretty piece of paper which is signed by murderers. You are not a riot. You are the tight leather pants on the old ex-general. You are not rebellion. I got the invite to your party and I threw it away. You are not a riot. You're an apologetic pad for the judge's gavel. You are not rebellion. You are a sitcom based on a torture chamber. You are not a riot. You are the fanfare for the king's drunken vomit. You are not rebellion. I got the invite to your party and I threw it away. A rebellion is both love and lust. And a riot is when lightning hits the right spot. And my painting isn't finished till it kills you. And it makes you feel more powerful than pills do. A rebellion is both love and lust. And a riot is when lightning hits the right spot. And my painting isn't finished till it kills you. And it makes you feel more powerful than pills do. You are not a riot. You are
Dirty D hanging out with you and sitting in front of me is somebody who you should all know. If you're watching him on TV and once you hear his voice, you know the one and only Boots Riley from The Coup. Musician extraordinaire. He's a favorite amongst many. But I know Boots not just as a musician, but as an activist somebody who has keen insight to the political landscape. So before we even talk about the fact that you got a show coming up, which is why you're here, I definitely got to pick your brains about a number of things that are going on. And, you know, let's start off with the George Zimmerman trial, the verdict, Trayvon. How have you been seeing this sort of situation?
Well, you know.
And let me just kind of rephrase it, because you've been around the world just recently. So you've seen a lot of and been a part of and been privy to a lot of the different types of unrest that's been resulting out of injustices. So how do we contextualize that globally speaking?
Well, I think right now we're in a stage where people are more and more trying to figure out mass ways of changing reality. They're taking notes from history and adding their new flavors to it. All over the world, people are doing things from taking to the streets to shutting things down and trying to build movements that are able to change the way the system works, or at least even at the smallest thing, change something simple around them that could be better in their life. Think with the Trayvon Martin case, there was a large uproar from a lot of communities all over the country, and especially from communities of color. And they finally, you know, arrested this guy, put him on, you know, got him set up for a trial. But I don't know anybody that thought that he might have gotten found guilty, you know, if they had a jury with no black people on it. I don't know, you know, I didn't think that. I really, myself, I don't know why anyone would think that the DA would prosecute this guy.
Especially since it was a reluctant prosecution, as they say.
Yeah, and, you know, if you heard the juror that was talking, some of the things that convinced her that Zimmerman was not guilty were things that the prosecution put up there. So, you know, I don't think, you know, and usually the prosecution calls witnesses that will testify, at the very least will testify in a way that helps out the prosecution's case. They invited a cop up there that told them that he believed George Zimmerman's story. So there was no prosecution in this case.
Right.
But let's take it beyond that. I think what the question is what do you do about these sorts of things, right?
Right.
I think what we heard happen once there was a large uproar about the Trayvon Martin case was this thing from the Obama administration and from various black leaders around, and by black leaders, I'm using quotations there, people that are put up as leaders of the black community, elected officials, some clergy that are working with elected officials and said, hey, we're going to handle this for you. Sit back. I was at a rally at Love Park in Philadelphia, and basically, you know, a black congressperson got up and told everybody that they might as well go home because the black Democrats are going to handle this.
The black caucus.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you know, and so that's the what they tried to use this uproar to do, to get people to have faith in the justice system. And the truth is that the justice system is not going to work for people. The only and this system isn't designed to work for us. There's a reason why there's a racist idea of black youth in the first place, and that reason has to do with poverty. This idea that, you know, how do you explain to everyone that's in poverty that poverty doesn't come from the system? How do you do that big magic trick where there's so many people that are poor, but you're trying to convince them that it's not the rich people whose fault it is, it's not the system's fault, it's them and their friends.
Right.
So what they do is they say, okay, poverty comes from people making the wrong choices. Poverty comes from people having the wrong self-image. Poverty comes from people, you know, being savage and not knowing how to resolve conflict. And so they make all these pictures, all these movies about kids that are caught up in the wrong thing, and they got guns and they're scary and this and that.
Oh, see,
and that there's a so that there's a base reason for that, and that's to say that these folks need help. They need to be locked up. And so if there wasn't a 911 Trayvon call, a lot of the people that are on Trayvon's side right now would have said, well, you know, he was doing something.
Right. Well, this is why I asked you, we're talking with Boots Riley. This is why I asked you to put it in a global context,
yeah,
because the scenario that you just described in many ways isolates what goes on in this country, mm-hmm, the superpower, the land of the free, home of the brave, and opportunity from the global reality that exists. So I guess in many ways it's no coincidence that most people don't know what's going on in some of the places you just came from. Because once you're able to connect the dots and go, okay, well, you're saying that poverty is because I didn't do the right thing, I made bad choices. But then explain this famine that's over here. Explain what's going on in Bangladesh. Explain, you know, and once you see it from those lenses.
Every place they're trying to pull the same.
Really?
You know.
Like, wow.
Well, you know, you hear about these missionaries to Africa that are trying to reduce poverty by getting people to have less sex. Right?
Really?
People are procreating too much. You know, they need to, you know, that they need to figure these things out, you know, or they need more education about this or that. Truth is, we all need education and we need more education. I'm all for that. But what this says in general to most of the people that are going to hear about these programs and not be involved in it,
right,
is the problem is not a systematic one. The problem is one that could be solved with some behavioral changes by
right.
poor people, right?
Mm.
And so, you know, in some places they're buying it more than others. You know, in Greece, it's like the people are not buying it as much, but they're trying to figure out ways to do it. That's where you got
but
the
in some
scapegoating
ways,
of the immigrants.
That's
there.
What I was going to say, because
you know?
In Greece, their thing yeah. is like they're not buying it, but then at the same time,
yeah,
and maybe that's privilege. They're very conveniently blaming black Africans and immigrants.
And to put it to because I went to Greece. That's a totally different group of people. There's a group of fascists that have been there since before all these protests were and have been around and get beat down by the other revolutionaries
right.
all the time. And so they're definitely there's some conflicts going on there, but you know it's times like these when you know people with racist and fascist ideas are able to spread their ideas more because you know one solution, saying that it's a system and we need to change the system, takes a lot of work.
Right.
Right? You can't just, you know, go about your day, and you have to get involved. The other situation where it's some people that need to change their behavior, whether it's some people that look like you or look like somebody else, that's something you don't have to do anything about. You can let the state handle that.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. You can let some other people handle that. Right? And that's what's happening all over the world. In France, it's Arab folks mainly and Africans that they blame. The differences have to do with how much movement there is around actually changing their lives. If, you know, in the countries in which there are people involved in trying to manipulate their world around them, trying to change, you know, the economic system around them, they're less likely to fall for racist ideas, even if the racist ideas are about someone else. Mm. In a system, in countries where we're told, where we don't get involved in changing our own reality, we're more likely to fall for it, even if the racist idea is about people that look like us.
Mm. Hence, right. You know, those black people in East Oakland, they're poor because, and you buy into the mainstream narrative.
Yeah, but if
even as you're black yourself.
If you're involved in, so if you're involved in, it's the same thing that came up with the BART strike. If you've ever been involved in a strike, you probably weren't, you know, complaining that BART workers were on strike.
Right.
If you've ever been involved in a fight and you know what kind of thing, you weren't, but if you've never been involved, when somebody starts fighting, you fall for the line that's put out there by the media. And so, I you know, for things like this that come up, that will, another Trayvon Martin case will come up next year, the year after it's happening. You know, we got a Trayvon Martin case right here in Oakland, Alan Bluford.
Right.
There's no videotape, so people aren't jumping on board as much. You know, there's no 911 call with him yelling for help. But we know he was yelling for help and begging for his life.
Right.
Right?
These
are happening all the time. But the thing is that if we don't get involved with fighting to change our material reality on a day-to-day basis, when these flagrant violations by the state or by people that want to be the state happen to us, we're not in any position to actually do anything about it.
Mm.
We're not, you know, so it's like high tide raises all boats. If you have a movement that's intertwined with everyday life and people are being involved with it, then when these situations come up, you know, you can imagine if BART was shut down because of the Alan Bluford case.
Mm.
Because we needed to take this guy to trial. Imagine if that happened. I bet you, you know, the cop would be being brought to trial pretty quickly.
Yeah. You know, when you look at this, you know, I mean, you've been laying out what exactly is going on. What do you think would be two steps that people need to take? Now, I heard one, which is that movements that we construct and be a part of need to involve everybody in everyday life, so they need to be more practical.
Well, but not only that, and not because that's on a general level, that people need to organize around where they work and where they live.
Mm.
You don't need to pick something that's, you know, an interesting thing only somewhere far away. It's harder, but you need to organize around where you work. There are issues everywhere.
Right.
And you need to create a working group around those things, whether you want to call it a union or whatever you want to call it, some sort of working group in which you're organizing in your place of work.
Right. Let me ask you one last question before we tell everybody where you're going to be at. I say that if they really wanted people to keep the system afloat, they would have found George Zimmerman guilty. Because then it would have given us reason to believe in the system more. Like, it does work, you know. So even though George Zimmerman's going to jail, he's not a cop. But for some reason, it will make you forget about an Alan Bluford or a Rekia Boyd and a Romali Graham because, you know, we have a victory. And we would celebrate that, theoretically.
Except that there are two problems at play. One is the problem of how do you explain poverty? And right now, and poverty is being explained as the fault of the people that are in poverty.
No, I get that.
And so to fight against that stereotype of young black folks being dangerous is a problem for the system.
So the system needed to have them free so that we can see black folks as a problem?
So that other, not we, I think that it's, well, this clearly divided.
But this is
definitely
this
a group of folks, a group of poor white folks in the South who think that their problems come from black folks wearing hoodies.
Right.
And
but this
you know,
is what I was getting. This is what I was getting at. This is what I was getting at when I said the question. Because the blackening and browning of America saw this and is like, if he's guilty, we buy into the system, let's go. But now you see very clearly, like, wow, okay, there was no justice here, no justice there, and now no justice here. In some ways, it can be liberating in the sense that now it's very clear that this system is not working. I hear a lot of people say, this is not working. So that leaves you open to try and find something that...
Well, that would be interesting if that led people to that conclusion, but usually what that leads people into the conclusion is that not that we need a new system, not that we need a new economic system, but we need to tweak this system a little bit.
So you think it's going to be a tweaking response?
Yeah, like we need to get better, we need to elect better judges, we need to, you know...
I believe that we need better judges and a better president.
But what creates the you know... It doesn't matter how good the president is. And we've had this discussion many times. He fits the job description. There's a job description. It doesn't matter what you want to do. You have to do certain things. And a DA is there to prosecute who the system deems criminals. If the DA decided to start prosecuting white collar crimes and saying, okay, this boss is ripping off their workers, that DA is not gonna be there. The DA is there to put, you know, poor folks in jail, you know? And that's what they're there to do. That's their job. If they don't do it, they're not keeping that job, so.
Well, we've been talking with Boots. You got a show coming up. See, I told you, I always talk to Boots about politics, but he's an incredible musician. First of all, congratulations, because we've been seeing you on TV everywhere. You know, you was on Late Night, not Conan O'Brien, but Carson Daly. Yeah, so they profiled you. That was a good look.
Profiling.
They highlighted you. They spotlighted you.
Right.
You know, everybody else was profiling you, you know. But no, it seems like the album is catching steam. And so how do you feel about it, and what can we expect this week?
Well, what you can expect this week, Yoshi's on Sunday at 8:00. Yoshi San Francisco will be doing a show. And the coup is a full band, and it's aggressive funk, punk, hip-hop, soul. It's something that has a driving beat and makes you dance. It's not something where you just sit there and bob your head. A lot of times people think of hip hop as like sitting there and be like, oh, those are interesting lyrics, let me bob my head. No, it's something where people dance and get sweaty.
I seen you dancing. Can we say Boots dances now?
I mean, I've been dancing.
We don't assume that you dance, but the last few shows.
I haven't been to a show.
I haven't been to a show in a while.
Since maybe the early 90s.
No, man, I've been to a few shows, but okay. No, but you was cutting up the rug, so to speak. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, what we do is we try to embody the music,
right,
and you know, make a visual representation of how we feel the music feels, and so that's basically what goes on with that. We got a new album out called Sorry to Bother You, which is, it's basically what we do, just on a more extreme level. You know, every album that we do kind of takes on its own personality and So, yeah.
With the show this week, will you have special guests since you're in town? Will there be...
Probably not.
No? Okay.
No. Who's on stage with us is, Silky is part of the coup. She's like a young Tina Turner. If you haven't seen her, I'm sure a lot of people already know her for her own thing. We got just raw musicians. We got Hassan Hurd on the drums. We usually have Benai Rebel Front on guitar, but for this show, we got our boy Grego Simmons on guitar. We got JJ Jungle on bass and LJ Holloman on organ.
Okay, so, cool. There you go. Boots from the Coup, man, keeping it real. Thank you so much.
Cool.
We're gonna take a break. We'll be right back.
Stop the bleeding, sharks are feeding, we ain't eating, no more bleeding, time for stampeding.